I have to push this button.
I pushed it twice.
Let's crank it up. What do you say? Let's get into that Christmas spirit. I know the rest of them, but I'm just not playing. See, I told you I knew the song.
You do know the song. Mary had a little lamb.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. Oh, I've got the Christmas spirit.
It's Christmas morning. I can't get over how fabulous it is. I left out, you know, this is the only time of year that you can trade a half-expired glass of milk and some stale cookies from Walmart and get presents.
It's amazing.
It's awesome. Well, I did have a carrot or two in case there was a reindeer.
Well,
but,
yeah.
You know, but what a awesome time of the year.
Well, listen, I know that you ain't been nothing but bad, so I'm not going to ask you what you...
I got 1.5 tons of coal.
Ain't been nothing. Oh, you and Joe Manchin.
And Joe Manchin.
No,
I've coal for Christmas.
Well, that's, you know, when I was a young child, I actually did one time get some coal for Christmas. But let's not get into that. Let's get into, I have too much science ready for you to talk
too
about.
Too much science for bad Christmas stories.
Plus, you know, we're doing this early in the morning, and I have to get back before the family finds out I'm missing.
No, they won't even radio a notice.
The Radio Science News Christmas edition.
Hey, so this is our last episode for the fabulously wonderful year of 2021. Yes.
You know, last year I was thinking, I'm glad that year. I'm thinking this year has had some little echoes. You know, they talk about history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. I think we've had some.
But you know, it seems to not just repeat itself, it seems to go in waves.
Well, yeah.
And we're currently in wave number 6.
Oh, man.
If you know what I mean.
Well, hey, let's get to the show. We'll see how far we can go. We've got tons of stuff to talk about
hey,
here.
You're listening to Radio Science News. This is the Christmas edition, December 25th, 2021. And if you've been keeping track, and I know that you have, this is episode number 818 in a series.
818. Ooh.
It looks the same if it's upside down. It looks the same if it's backwards.
That's nice.
If I were into numerology, and I'm not, I would be going, ooh.
Well, I thought you were a mathematician.
There's
a difference. There's a difference.
There is a slight difference.
You know, I'm just going to say, if you put 818 vertically, and just because you like, then you turned it sideways, it would look like infinity.
Infinity and beyond infinity. You could actually put a mirror halfway in between and it would still look like an 818.
So much science.
You could put the mirror on the horizontal halfway and it would look like 818. You could put the mirror vertically.
Oh my goodness.
On the one and it would look like 818.
This is really, I feel like this
okay.
is a very
maybe
special
I
day.
Am a numerologist. Not
now,
not
is that,
a numerologist.
Like a, is that like a pulmonologist? No.
Yes.
I think you're pulling my leg right
now.
Yes,
I am definitely pulling your leg.
All right. Hey, I'll let you roll.
This is roll on. So this is 818. If you're into prime numbers, you know that anything that ends in an 8 is definitely not a prime number. The factors are 2 and 409. Isn't that interesting? That's a pretty big prime number, 409. We don't get to prime numbers.
Well, but you know what also is?
What's that?
It's the famous Beach Boys song. 409 forward. Never been a game. My 409. Yeah, it's a classic car song, Robert. There's too many. Obviously, we're gonna get a new car today or something. I don't know.
I want a Ford. F-150 because I want an electric truck. I would love an electric truck.
Lightning.
Okay, so to radio science news. I just want to say it's going to be a real shame to see 2001 in the rearview mirror.
Of your electric truck, especially.
Of your electric truck.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great if you
charge that. So if you want to join us on the launch pad of science, and I know that you're just dying for it, if you go to www.smartcenter.org, just above the little trifecto rainbow t-shirt images there, click on the words Radio Science News, and it takes you directly to the launch pad of science that Richard has been lovingly putting up since what? 2006? April of 2006?
It's been a long time.
It's been a long, long time. Hey.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of really cool things. There's the Rossi blog, and if you're into to wild, interesting state-of-the-art physics, and we know that you are or you wouldn't be tuning in, the Rossi blog is cool. The fizz.org, the Medical Express, space station, space calendar, on and on and on. There's just lots and lots of cool stuff. But I diverge.
Yeah.
Asymptotically. And we are going to go to Saturday, December 25th, 2021. We've got COVID pill. Now, does that mean that if you take it that you get COVID?
No.
Why would... Well, no, no.
Some people... Well, let's have... There probably is that
disinformation
out there. Let's
not start that rumor, right?
Absolutely. And actually, you know, when I put this up, between the time I posted COVID pill, which is about the FDA's approval of...
Which I think
the,
is awesome.
The Pfizer COVID pill. The Merck pill was also approved by the FDA.
Wow.
So I could have put pills, you know,
pills.
As plural.
Yeah, so it could be COVID pills.
But, you know, we've kind of already mentioned that. Shot number four.
So shot number four. Now, I've had shot number one, two, and three. So when do I take shot number four?
Well, there's discussion of people. In Israel, they're basically doing that now with you know, compromised people. I'm going to have to say if there is any... Well, you know, there's...
Silver lining?
Yeah. There seems to be... Now, and I'm going to say, everybody doesn't completely agree on this, that the latest, the Omicron...
Omicron?
You know, all the different... it's appearing from what is fairly good data from all multiple countries that you know, it may spread much quicker,
but it might not be as bad.
Yeah, and even that, in terms of the logistics of this whole thing, it also means that, as you said, you're a numerologist, you're a mathematician, not a numerologist.
Thank you for correcting that.
Or a pulmonologist. one of the things that happens when something spreads very quickly is that it will spike quickly and then start to diminish quickly.
Yeah,
leaving behind people that are either alive. And, you know, depending on how severe, because one of the real issues of discussing whether it's more or less severe is the question of if it's already, as they point out in Africa, where the population had already undergone a huge Delta infection. So it's not like you had population that's being, you know, infected by this. So, but for the most part, I'm going to just say I will take the possible good news that it is a mild variant.
I certainly
now, the
so.
Other thing is there's some stuff about being super immune. We've got some really good stories. The Army vaccine, this is really cool news. And there's something about, we have so much medical stuff here. Flu vaccine, and then there's some, the last two are kind of little cautionary tales.
Okay.
There's quick test and nanobody. Oh, there's kind of good news about the supply chain problems, Robert.
The non-supply chain problems, the non-problems of the supply chain.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Your good friend, who sent us the thing about the pilot of that spotted the so-called Tic Tac UFO.
Our good friend Ted S.
Ted sent that.
A Bickler.
And then there's some cool stuff about a dino egg. And you know what? I'm subject to watching TV occasionally, like as little as possible. And I've noticed something interesting on, I'm going to say, I guess it was the Jared Diamond commercials.
Oh.
You know? Of course, everybody's out there looking to buy some diamonds for their friends.
Oh, I certainly am.
And I use them because I use them to sharpen my tools. But other than that, but this is a cool thing. The last two, and you notice it says diamonds. The first one is kind of a little bit of overarching little ad about the fact that many, I mean, I'm going to say maybe at some point for this particular company, they basically only sell lab-created diamonds. And they have a whole rationale why they do that. Then the second one was a much more complex thing that talked about the different systems. So I thought that was
only fascinating. Only sell lab-created diamonds.
Well, you and I have looked at a lot of the scientific reasons for diamonds.
And there's also... There's the economic issue and the person issue.
Well, there's a lot of stuff.
There are some bad things that occur to get that
little shiny bling.
Lock. Yeah, that shiny clear piece of carbon. Yeah.
So anyway, I'll tell you what. Why don't we jump in?
Let's do it.
And I'm going to say that we may cover these first ones relatively quickly.
Sure.
And you know, I didn't even try to put up the TT10 and the C. difficile, the transplant.
Because you know what? If the wonderful folks out in Radio Land want to do that, they can do that on their own. They don't need to hear.
They
me
don't
on
need
on
us.
About it.
Okay, so quick they look at COVID.
They do need us, but
COVID pill Paxlovid. They should have called it Paxlovid.
Who makes up these things? What they should have called it was, phew.
Well, and the thing is, anytime it's a the vid I think means it's a viral, but the the idea that this is going to bring peace on earth or something at Christmas, Pax. But anyway, first doses of Paxlovid, Pfizer's new COVID pill, are released to the states. Now there are going to be a lot of logistics issues with this, but I am going to have to say that this is a big deal. This is really a big deal.
It says, but. I'm just glancing down because I've seen little snippets of this.
Yeah.
It says an initial 65,000 courses of Paxlovid will be made available for shipment to states and territories and will begin arriving at dispensing sites by the end of December.
So they're literally kind of on their way, right?
It says essentially now. It says only California, Florida, New York, and Texas are receiving more than 3,000 treatment courses. Well. Don't we have like 100,000 of these a day?
Well, there's no question. There's a logistics thing. I mean, one of the real issues about this is that even just in the testing, it was so efficacious. And I mean, the Merck is not quite as good, but it's still very good. One of my questions was, what if you took the two together? Because they probably have two. We'll get to all that. But the problem is, it's one of these things where it's a complex chemical process to create this particular medicinal. And they're going to roll it out relatively fast. But one of the big issues is going to be, this needs to go to people who really need it.
Who are
immune compromised. Yes. Even though I did hear, and this is going to be an interesting thing, I wouldn't want to get into it too much here, but they're going to say, well, you know, the people that are going to really need this are the people that come to the hospital who are not vaccinated. And so...
Isn't that interesting?
The irony is...
Yes, that is ironetic.
Well, anyway, we're going to let everybody follow this, because I want to hit these. These are...
So it looks like that you're supposed to take two of these pills... Each day for 5 days.
Yeah, it's like a little 5-day course.
It says here, as I scan down, it says that this appears to reduce the risk of a hospitalization or death by 89%.
This is really
compared with a placebo when taken within the first 3 days of the symptoms. When taken within 5 days, the drug reduced the risk of hospitalization death. By 88%. So it goes
slight
from 89%
difference.
To 88%, which is statistically blah.
The logistics of it having to be that it needs to be administered very quickly after
very quickly,
onset.
Yes.
You know, the other thing would be of symptoms. What if you tested and you didn't have any symptoms yet? I guess it would probably still be good as quickly as possible. But one of the real strange things is like you're going, oh, wait a minute. When this is finally available and widely available, taking the time to take the test almost seems like a moot thing. Like if you could just, like if you had symptoms that you thought you had COVID, rather than wait for a, I actually saw a thing where they're talking about a congressman, you would think would be in the very center of being able to get taken care of, said that his PCR test took 56 hours.
Right. That's a long time. Hey, one more thing that I am that I'm going to ask. Federal government has a contract with Pfizer to buy 10 million courses of the treatment for $5.3 billion. When you do the math, that's a course of treatment is $530.
Wow, I didn't realize
so that. So this is a lot, and the United States is going to foot the bill. They're going to say, hey, guys, to save lives.
And this will be primarily administered in the United States. Yeah. So, you know, for a lot of people who don't think that we need to take care of one another, I mean, I'm just going
to
say,
if you just
take that little thing, that it may be very much the case that the people that will need this more than anybody will be unvaccinated people.
Yep.
Who are now, you know, in much distress and will get this. And I think it's a wonderful thing that as a nation, as taxpayers, as, you know, folks who are all in it together, we do help out that way.
I don't have any problem with that whatsoever.
All right, I'm jumping to the fourth COVID vaccine, ? Okay. Dun, dun, dun. And it's basically, this is a lot of this comes from... it's because in Israel, where of course it's a smaller population, it's a country that is very proactive about all this kind of stuff. They basically have determined that, and again, we're talking about first giving this to folks who are more at risk. You know, and a lot of it has to do with, like I say, if your immune system has been suppressed by, you know, like a transplant, all kinds of things that can happen where you're not able to develop. So we're literally looking at the possibility that there'll be a fourth, you know, administration.
That makes perfect sense.
And some people will say, in a world where a lot of people haven't got the first yet, anyway. So this is really cool. The Prime Minister Bennett of Israel says he welcomes the news. Fourth shot would help Israel survive the Omicron variant surge. You know, blah blah blah. Wonderful news. Another quick thing I do want to say is I know that of the data coming in, certainly very important that it may have, it's milder.
Yeah.
The thing that they're showing is that there's a huge spike in the number of people, you know, getting the COVID-19 Omicron variant, but that the hospital rates have not moved much at all, meaning, you know, that's indicative of not being so severe.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So this is really cool, and according to Dr. Scott Gottlieb, the former commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, and I'm just going to say under another president, it was weird because I actually saw him being a little critical of not having, you know, anyway, the point is they believe that the U.S. may be on the brink of a fourth shot as well.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that at all. To quote a very wise man, the father of my wonderful wife, he has recently said, "I will roll up my arm as many times as it takes. Please,
so I can
give
keep,
me the shot,
so I can keep rolling up my sleeve."
Exactly.
Apparently, yes, that's excellent stuff. Yeah. Now, a little quick thing about the variant: the fact it says Omicron variant has 80% lower risk of hospitalization, according to the study.
Pretty amazing. If that's true, I
have seen several people, you know, being cautiously optimistic because I think, as they always say, the devil's in the details. You know, if you're taking a population that's already had a huge outbreak of Delta and other, you know, COVID, it's very possible that you're reflecting the immune, you know, the immune response of the surviving people. So that's
what worries me is that
I know what you're saying.
Like this, they're going to go, "Oh God, I can finally take my mask off. I can hug every stranger I see on the street, and I can breathe in their face."
Well, and I'm going to say the other.
No, that's not what we're saying, folks.
Well, and the other thing that I think is really important to not do is to go, as you said, so this isn't so bad anyway. But again, you may only be talking about someone when they're talking about this particular number. You have to go back as someone who would look at the statistics, and you would go, so what population did I start with?
Right. Exactly.
And if the population that you're starting with are already the survivors of the Delta variant, then your math you have to take it with some caution.
Yes.
The other thing, of course, is, as you said, things you hate to see people saying, There, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, well, that's great. Now that we have this pill, I don't have to bother.
I don't have to bother because if I get sick, they're just going to
give
die.
Me the. They're just gonna give going to give me the pill. No,
no.
First of all, the pill's not available.
There aren't enough of these pills out there.
And the other thing is, you may not, you know, in a timely way, get it. Or, as somebody pointed out, we're not even talking about the so-called long COVID things.
No.
Which is a real profound situation. The fact that you go, oh great, well I survived. Now this is an interesting piece of. I have noticed so many people. I mean, there have been some different. Folks who have been on, you know, the media or news announcers or people in Congress. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, there have been a whole bunch of people who have been triple. They've got the vaccination, you know, then the booster. Basically, we're saying a triple vaccination.
Yeah.
And then they've come down with COVID. And sure. I mean, even in a lot of them say, I literally had no to just like slight, you know, cough-like symptoms. Now, one of the things that may happen, it says, if we have a large population of fully vaccinated people who also get a mild or even asymptomatic Omicron infection from the latest wave here, it says the Omicron variant could give fully vaccinated people super immunity, because now it's almost like as if you had another vaccination on top.
Right.
There has long been discussion of whether having a natural infection from a COVID, whichever variant, that you survived would imbue you with really good immunity anyway.
The thing about that is that we're finding that seems to be a temporary sort of a thing. It seems to only last for 4 or 5 or maybe
and that's
six,
the stuff we don't
months.
Know. We just don't know.
So what they need to say, I think, is that this doesn't give you super immunity. It gives you a brief super immunity.
And also in terms of what the English language actually means, super immunity would just mean some above.
Immunity beyond.
The root of the word is just that it's above, you know, on top of, or just on top of, like another. Right. It's kind of like that guy that, you know, Rob Larson, the guy has, you know, he takes off a mask and he goes, you know,
yes.
You would have another extra, extra protection. And this last thing, they're talking about how the research that they had with the Delta showed that people who did had a breakthrough infection of the Delta, that they had a very strong, you know, immune response against, you know, getting it again. Like it really produced a lot of antibodies. And it down to the last bullet point on this is suggests the Omicron variant could create super or, you know, immunity above and beyond. However, little specific research has been done into how the variant could lead to more immunity. Research has shown that the Omicron variant evades vaccines and natural antibodies. So we're looking at perhaps a different spectrum of, you know, antibodies and. Because it's going to have different sites that have mutated.
Sure.
Anyway, I'm just going to say that I'm seeing there's sort of like a group of things that give you some hope, you know, like that even as we go through this very terrible situation, the fact that it's a mild variant, that we could possibly, you know, be getting 4 shots, and that even folks who go and somehow happen to contact a mild case of the Omicron because they've been triple vaccinated, they may actually have superior immunity than they would have before. You know, that's not a great silver lining, and I wouldn't recommend that you go bar hopping or anything just to do this.
Now, get your super immunity.
Now, this next story I found really, I'm going to say this was a really, the story about the Army vaccine.
It says COVID-19 vaccine that may produce protection against all variants.
And just,
now, if I were going to write this, I would put all in all caps.
Well,
because if that's true, this is pretty exciting.
Well, and here's the thing that's interesting. Now, of course, I also want to point out that just because you and I, Robert, as science people, will if there's good data, we'll take it. This happens to be from a site that we don't often. You know, we don't usually.
Who is this guy? A Walter Reed.
Well, not Walter Reed.
All kinds of cool stuff.
He's a great Walter. The story is actually one that was, and this may also this also may point toward a change in people's attitudes. This is a FoxNews.com/health. Like they have a whole thing on health, Fox News Health.
That's neat.
So the reason why this is, oh, you have some cool, is that me or you?
I believe that's you.
Why do I have Christmas music on?
Because it is
Christmas. Oh, man. Oh, skip the ad. Let me see if I can skip this ad. Gee whiz.
Well, it could be from Santa.
No, it could be. Let's see.
All its variants, here we go. Even Omicron, as well as from previous SARS origin viruses that have killed millions of people worldwide. Do you know anything about this, or can you shed any light on it?
Yes. Yeah, Shannon, this is something we've been hoping for a long time. It's scientifically feasible, and that is you create a vaccine that is a pan-coronavirus vaccine. It works against all variants, and what they've done is they've taken a protein and 24 different surfaces of that protein are similar to different aspects of the coronavirus, so you're getting a lot of different levels of immunity, not just to the spike protein. It's in phase one clinical trials. They just announced the results, so it's about a year away from being out there.
Well, it could go faster, I think.
Okay, well, if it's something that can handle all variants, because we have no idea what they're going to be at this point, I think...
Well, anyway, Fox News even is jubilant about this story, which is great.
Well, good for you, Fox News.
And also, I'm just going
to
say...
I don't get to say that. Often
well,
enough.
And like I said, when good information comes out, and the idea that the Army has been working on this, you know, for quite a while, and you know, the initial, and if we had initially stopped COVID-19 by only addressing the subunit protein, and that kept it from creating all its variants, then you know that would have been one thing. But in some ways, we've been pushed beyond. And the other thing I'm also thinking about, okay, so if this is something that's common to all coronaviruses, are we looking at the common cold also? Or are we looking at...
Well, we should be.
Well, and we have talked about over the years many strategies. I know that at some point somebody had designed a molecule that just literally blocked... the common cold is kind of like an icosahedron, the viruses, these coronaviruses. They have a similar structure, and they had found some combination of... basically a designer molecule that just blocked all the entrances to the common cold. And I don't know where that all went, but this sounds like something similar. Okay, since we had since the Army is like jumping on all these vaccines.
Before we jump off, I was just curious. It said it was a 24-sided object.
Yeah, well, the protein that they're using was, and that's what I caught that too, because at first I was thinking, how does that relate to the?
So I was going online and trying to find exactly what a 25-sided or excuse me a 24-sided object is called, and I'm getting all kinds of different. Answers.
Isn't it a dodeca? No, wait a minute.
It's an icosatetragon. But I think that's a flat one. I want a three-dimensional.
Yeah, I have seen it somewhere before.
We'll have to look. It says in geometry, a tetracosagon or 24-gon is a 24-sided polygon, but that's a polygon.
I'm trying to picture the structure. Wait, look who is here, our assistant.
Is it on there at all?
The dodecahedron, so that could be it. Okay. Isn't a dodec the 12?
We have a polyhedra poster.
There's 12, and then an icosahedron is 20, so it's not that.
You're right. I'm looking at the truncated, and it may be that those surfaces.
It could be an icosahedron.
Yeah.
I will look into that for our math listeners.
Well, and the point may be that it doesn't have as opposed to a lot of them that we look at, like the icosahedron, have all equal surfaces. This might have. And within that particular molecule, one way or the other, it attaches and cancels out some aspect of the... this is really exciting. Okay, so that was good news. The other good news was, as I was just searching through... in fact, this just came up on December 23rd. It says, no more annual flu shot. Researchers find new target for a universal... influenza vaccine.
I have been hearing about this, and I am excited. I think this is going to be really neat.
Okay, so this is
Oh, the scientists at Scripps Research. So it said that the scientists at Scripps Research, University of Chicago, and the Icahn School of Medicine, Mount Sinai, have identified a new Achilles heel of the influenza virus, making progress in the quest for a universal flu vaccine. See, the thing that would be so wonderful is to be able to, you know, stop this thing in its tracks without even caring about, obviously, the flu just keeps mutates.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if you go, you know, it doesn't really matter if this is the Alpha, the Delta, or the Omicron. This is going to cover that, the regular flu, the common cold, the entire thing. If we could make a viral.
This is really
sort of a thing. That would be awesome.
It says here that they are working with antibodies against a long ignored section of the virus, which the team dubbed the anchor, have the potential to recognize a broad variety of flu strains even as the virus mutates from year to year. So this is just December 23rd, just 2 days
around
ago.
Around the corner.
According to Andrew Ward, PhD, and I love his title, Professor of Integrity of Structural and Computational Biology. Wow, how'd you like to have that on your card?
No,
your cards.
You
have to have
my
two cards. he says it's always very exciting to discover a new site of vulnerability on a virus because it paves the way for rational vaccine design.
Rational vaccine design. Well, I like that term.
This is great. I mean, as they get down into the structure, this is one of the reasons why we've always liked nanotechnology and stuff so much. When you can start viewing our world at this scale.
Yep. Amazing things begin to happen.
And sometimes you do, as I mentioned with that the cold. But one time there was like a big deal of we're going to stop the common cold. It literally had to do with when you get down into the, you know, that scale of understanding. Then it's almost like, well, if we could design a tinker toy that would fit in here, it could never function. And so this is when they talk about the anchor antibodies, we describe bind to the site. This is really interesting stuff. I'm just scrolling real quickly. I want to see that there's it's a longer article than I thought. I'm looking down here.
Yeah, it's a very, very good.
Oh, it's got a whole list, a lot of thanking of all the people. The researchers are planning future studies on how to design a vaccine that mostly targets what they're calling the HA anchor of different influenza strains.
Wow.
This would be really good because basically what they're saying is instead of that annual flu shot, if this is efficacious against the whole broad spectrum of influenzas that we face, you would get a vaccine and, as your friend says,
and then you're done. And see, the wonderful thing about this is that once they're cut off, they don't get to mutate anymore.
Yeah, they don't.
And we never hear from them again.
Take that.
I'm all for this.
Take that, you rascals.
I say make them extinct.
Now, just because I said a couple of these stories in my big, long series of good news medical stories were cautionary tales,
okay.
I looked for, because I actually, in the midst of all the discussion about testing, now you and I put up stories multiple times. I remember the hospital in Michigan had come with a quick test that was just like, you know, and you're going, well, what? Because everybody's being critical. Why don't we have the test? They talked to somebody who actually proposed. I'm going to just click on if you're on the, and you do need to be on the launch pad of science at radioscience.org. Because following these links is the only way this show makes any sense.
You go, what are you talking about?
So this is a story, and I'm looking. This sounds exciting. I'm just going to read it, and you're going to be excited when you see the headline.
I am excited.
Biotech
just because of the artwork.
Startup with the MIT TATA Center produces a 15-minute test for COVID-19.
15-minute test.
Company looks to FDA for emergency clearance to allow widespread. So then I'm looking. I'd like you to look at the date, Robert, if you would look at the date.
April 16th, 2020.
Oh, this is
Wait. Are you telling me that 2 weeks... month after we locked down in 2020, that MIT said, hey guys, we have a 15-minute test.
Okay,
where has this been?
What was a fascinating thing, I saw that one of the major people involved, this Irene Bosch at MIT, And the company is called E25 Bio, Cambridge, Massachusetts-based biotech startup that develops diagnostic tests for various diseases. They developed a test for dengue fever and Zika.
Zika?
It says it has a rapid antigen test for COVID-19.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to give you the next little line.
The middle of April in 2020.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason is that the startup recently received from investors $2 million to specifically develop and manufacture testing kits for COVID-19. This was a month after the lockdown.
So it's just early into it. So it says that the diagnostic test resembles an over-the-counter pregnancy test, produces visual results within 15 minutes by detecting the pre- Here's the thing. It detects the presence of the virus in the patient's sample. So it's not, when they say it is, I guess, antigen-based. But the point of, as I understood from her discussion, one of the reasons why
I just want to say,
damn,
about
I know
this
what you want
time,
to say. Damn
I
it.
Was ranting and raving that why are we not creating simple over-the-counter 15-minute test. You swab it on the thing, it changes color, yay or nay, you know if you've got this, and then you move on. And lo and behold, somebody's done it because the technology exists.
Okay, and I'm just going to say that this whole thing basically looks like, oh my gosh, let's roll. But this was, this was under a different administration, the FDA under a different administration.
Was this purposefully squashed?
That's kind of the discussion about, why in the world. Because it says here, given the exponential rate of the virus, it's critical need to deploy fast, reliable, and it was very fast and very reliable, easy to use point of care test, to flatten the curve.
Right.
And it would have been such a good thing, except
this is what
it was.
This is what we went on and on about on a radio science.
Well, there were more than one of these
tests
out there too. So, all I'm just going to say is it goes to the question of how important testing was and how critical it can be. They did not get the FDA approval at that time because the FDA was kind of going on about, as I understood from her discussion, and it would be, it'd be neat to look into and hear what the, because I think maybe they're back in it now and they're going to, they're going to get this test out there. It had to do with the fact that the test, I think the way she put it was that the test was most effective early on because you're testing for the virus.
Right.
And whereas the PCR test is testing for the antigens.
After you have the virus.
Yeah, and so the point was that this thing was more effective at the beginning and then maybe became less effective if you were 2 weeks into it.
Yeah, but what you need to know is am
right
I
now.
Infectious?
Yeah, right now.
Right now, should I stay home? Do I need to go to the hospital? Do I need to,
So this is it. Well, this will be interesting.
This just makes me angry.
Well, we were discussing the fact that there were multiple tests that looked like they were really good, and yet nobody was being allowed to do it.
And here we are, almost 2 years later, and we don't have this. I can't go to the store.
And maybe it'll finally be out on the market. Who knows? Now, I didn't want to get you too riled.
I wonder we're in such a mess.
Well, but I'm just going to say that it had to do with, I don't know. We don't know the example. Now, you'll love this one too, Robert, because you may remember talking about this story. That was in April. This is just barely into May. This is later, so I'm sorry. This is actually...
Hand, no body.
We talked about this.
Yeah.
Of course, I know that it's really important to protect our hamsters.
We have to keep them safe.
We've got those little guys down there on that treadmill, keeps the electricity coming to our building.
It's called, I believe, Cooey on a Stick.
No.
No, what?
Inhaled nanobodies protect hamsters from COVID-19.
All right.
We talked about this
Save
story
the hamster.
From our University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine friends.
Just down the road.
And again, this is something that's because we're talking about the fact that we need good treatments. If we don't have other stuff, we need to have good treatments. And the thing that was amazing about this, and again, here's the whole point, inhalable nanobodies targeting the spike protein prevent and treat severe COVID-19. Test animals, in this case, hamsters. Now, the thing that's interesting, it's when they talked about nanobodies, The point is, they're similar to the monoclonal antibodies that everybody was talking about. But
smaller in size. And more stable and cheaper to produce. Oh, not okay, that.
But wait a minute. We didn't get to the very best part. The treatment mechanism for getting these into your system is simple inhalation. And guess what?
Wait. But what about a needle?
No, I'm
sorry. What about a syringe?
Well,
what about a vial?
What about an IV drip?
A cold storage.
Now, here's another coincidence.
Yeah,
Robert, this, I'm sure this
people.
Is purely coincidental, too. But let me just mention this again. It says inhalable, and it was called Nanobody 21, PIN 21, protected hamsters from the dramatic weight. What they were indicating was that you had hamsters that got COVID and hamsters that didn't. The ones that got it just started just fading away.
Wasting away.
So they were using a weight. It says, here's the part that's cool. It says it reduced, here's the thing that I say, what an interesting coincidence. Reduce the number of infectious virus particles in the animal's nasal cavities, throats, and lungs. Oh, wait
by
a minute.
A million fold compared to the placebo treatment.
Now, see, I'm thinking that's like 10 to the 6, isn't it?
At least 10 to the 6.
But maybe think about that. It's a million times less of the virus was found in the nasal cavities. That's where you'd swab. They had to get this little, every time the hamster had to sit still while you swabbed his nasal.
Poor little thing.
but the important thing is, what was the root of infection? It's the nasal cavity in your throat, mucosa, and then your lungs.
All right. For those people out there that are saying a million, I don't know really what that means. Okay.
Wow.
Imagine, if you will, 500 2-liter bottles of soda.
Well, that's what I have on my porch right now. 500?
And compare that to 1 cc. The volume of your little pinky nail.
That was, if I put it on top of there.
Right. That's about the size of 1 cc. That's 1 millionth of a metric ton of fluid. Okay?
Wow.
500 2-liter bottles of fluid compared to 1 cc. Now, your shot that you got was more than 1 cc. So if you were to compare that, that's how much
the 5 cc
change
shot.
Is. Yes. Yeah. That's how much the change is.
Well, this is pretty amazing.
A million fold.
And all I can say is, as far as I know...
See, the way that we understand that we transmit this from one animal to the other, one human being to the other, a bat or a pangolin or a hamster to another.
It takes a quantity of the virus.
It takes a cloud of this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, if you reduce that cloud by a million times, you're not gonna get it.
Yeah. It's like if you were changing your social distancing from 6 feet to 6 miles or something.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Like or you know, in that area. Now this is interesting. I'm almost curious about so these things, what I was saying, these are cautionary tales about wonderful things that were happening that could have happened, but apparently
But for some reason did not. And I just wanted to say this. Science would not allow this to happen. Only politics would allow this to happen.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
just want to say that, folks.
I see two.
Good science would not allow things like this to go to waste.
Fall in the cracks.
But the politics would.
Well, and the other, I mean, there's no question that
guilty,
it's important.
Guilty.
It's important to do all these steps, you know, to prove things. Not that there was any real dangers here. But now I did notice that this guy is actually. The professor of immunology at Pitt is Doug Reed. I wonder if PhD. I wonder if he's related to Walter. One of Walter's many.
Probably.
Maybe not.
I would like
to hope that this approach, and again, one of the reasons why this is such a great approach is that when they're talking about nanobodies, it's like much smaller particles, which means that you can literally inhale it and it covers your nose, throat, and into your lungs
instantly,
and there you go,
and then you're done.
And then you're done. Well, hopefully then you're not done. That's the important thing.
Hopefully the hamsters are not done. Yes.
You know, Robert, I do feel like one of the themes of a lot of the news that's come out recently, even though things, I mean, there have been many dire issues and stories here, but you know, like having the COVID. Well, and before we depart from this story, where they're talking, where we're talking about how everybody is so careful not to, like we talked about the, you know, the patch vaccine, yeah. All these things where everybody goes, you just can't throw stuff out there. I'm just going to point out, and I you know, I'm not against the fact that we're going to put out the COVID pill, the Paxlovid, right. But as they point, if you've seen it, it's a big pill.
Is it?
It's a big pill. It's like, you know, I said, is that a pill or is that a suppository? I wasn't sure. It's a big pill. But the other thing is, one of the things is they think this is so important that we're going to go ahead and we're giving emergency approval. Mm-hmm. This one, somebody said, now this is a strong pill, and there are a whole bunch of side effects. So the thing is, like, you go, oh, so this is interesting. We have all these things that have, like, no side effects, and mm-hmm. yet we have to go through 6 months of thing, and then this is...
And then for some reason... So I don't know. So the pill, you have two a day. They're big. I guess you put one up one nostril, and the other and then you can't breathe in the stuff.
You know, I think that's what's this going is on. Like swallowing some of those vitamins sense. I see some of my friends take. Like, I go, what are you going to do with that thing? Are you going to crush it up? And they go, nah, I just get it, you know, it'll go down. I'm going, wow. All right, so we're talking about things that may actually appear to be better news now than they have been for, like, the last couple of months. You know, this is an interesting little thing. It says, are gifts getting delivered on time this year?
Oh, this is the supply chain.
Oh, Robert, I'm telling you and I, we kind of went back and forth about, okay, so what's the real...
Did the Biden administration save Christmas?
Well, they may be saying so, but yeah, because... I'm going to have to say the obverse is actually probably true, is that Christmas was not in the dire consequences. And so that's one possibility. The other is when everybody became aware, as you naturally would, and now I'm going to say some people became aware of this problem and decided, all right, launch the rockets at the Biden administration because they're doing a lousy job and mm-hmm. they're ruining this, and their gas prices are going up and on and on.
Well,
and
you know
on
what?
And
the
on.
Gas prices I've noticed have come down in the last few
well,
days.
Well, in Moundsville, they were below $2. They were at the Walmart. They were below $3 uh-huh. level, $2.90 something.
Wow.
So I'm just going to say, and again, here's this point. Did the Biden administration save Christmas? I'm going to say that they took a bit of a victory lap, mostly to point out that, okay, if this was not an issue that people were drumming up, it certainly had real components.
Mm-hmm. It did.
The way I saw the Biden folks were explaining this was, everybody working together to do the different things they could. And there's no question that Biden put together a very robust system of, like, addressing the, you know, I mean, a simple thing like, why are you only running the cranes at the port 12 hours a day? Let's go 24 hours a day.
Duh.
You know, there were all these issues that they basically set out.
You can't get enough stuff off the boats. Well, then why don't you... go around the clock.
Well,
we hadn't thought of that.
And I'm just going to say, I've seen so many stories.
Turn on
like
the lights.
Yeah, like Jen Psaki. It says, good news, we've saved Christmas, she said during a brief it was kind of tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
And it says, and that is because President Biden recognized the challenge early, acted as an honest broker to bring the key stakeholders together. I mean, he brought all the, and again, he didn't brag about it, so everybody just kept blaming him for the problem. Focused on addressing practical problems across the global supply chain. The issue of global supply chain is yet to be resolved, but for the most part, I'm going to say I saw so many stories where they were showing the question of, like, on-time delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So the UPS and the USPS, so the postal system itself and UPS, were something like 99%.
Oh.
You know, on-time delivery, and FedEx was like at 97, mm-hmm. you know, relatively no difference at all.
Yeah.
And they even compared it to prior Christmases, like 2 years ago.
Wow.
And
they're still at that rate.
Well, and basically they showed that in the midst of all of this, and even all the really negative stories about that, I mean, somebody went on and did a collage of all the nasty stories that were being done, shown, especially with just Biden being shown with a Grinch face superimposed because he's ruining Christmas and on and on and on.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was so cute that they did that.
No, what it seems to be boiling down to is that there are some people
that have
seen this as an opportunity
to
make enormous amounts of good quick cash, to say, You know, maybe I'm going to leave your product out in the harbor until you pay me enough to bring it in.
Well, and that was one of the one of the key things was the prices for, as you learned from some of your suppliers, but even the people
as
that,
a store
probably owner. one of the biggest things was the initial ship cartage where they actually, you know, people would say one of these containers that 2 years ago cost you $30 and now it's $300. It was that kind of a thing.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Well, there, you know what? I have noticed
advantage of a bad situation.
I have noticed, Robert, there are people that like to pile onto a problem.
There certainly are.
Wow. Okay, now the Tic Tac UFO.
Oh, there
now,
we go again.
You'll probably notice that when you click on the Tic Tac, this isn't the one that he sent us, because you know he always sends me their stories, but he never includes the link, so I have to go. I don't know how he does it. I think he saves it as an HTML, then, you know what I mean, because I was going, where's the link? I didn't find it, but I did find that the Navy pilot who filmed the so-called Tic Tac UFO speaks out. And if you read this whole thing, we're certainly not going to read the whole thing now, but a pilot named Underwood. And you know, one of the things that I found fascinating is, and I've talked to my brother about this.
Okay.
But it turns out.
He says what?
Well, he doesn't talk about it. And you go, why should your brother talk about it all? Well, this particular story is actually from way back. I didn't realize how far back this story goes. November 10th, 2004, when Kevin Day first reported seeing an odd, slow-moving objects. You know, San Clemente off the San Diego, elevation of 28,000 feet, and, you know, yeah, anyway, so too high to be birds, and you know, long story, it says, eventually David, this sounds like a frivol, commanding officer of the Black Aces, made visual confirmation. Anyway, this is where all those great films of what appears to be like a 40-foot-long white oblong object, so they started calling it the Tic Tac. Because it was hovering there, no exhaust. You need to read through this because, you know, we're not gonna spend. We're kind of like cramped for time here, I think. Anyway,
I just wanted to say that there's a couple things that jump out at me.
Yeah.
The first is that this thing goes from 28,000 feet down to sea level in a really quick amount of time. And what amazed this guy was there was no sonic boom.
Yeah, that's
and
pretty cool.
What he was saying was there should have been a sonic boom. And he goes, being somebody that deals with these kinds of speeds and understanding what's going on, he goes, that was he said there wings. There wasn't an exhaust trail. There was no obvious ways that this thing could fly. That he found odd. But what really freaked him out was no sonic boom.
Yeah. So the very experiential things you could do. Now this is a really neat article, and it's fairly long. I'm going to say I looked at the very end, and one of the cool things they talked about was. I mean, as a pilot and everything, they're asking him, well, what do you think it is? He goes, hey, he says, here it is, says, you know, like, what was his perspective? He says, well, he didn't, is it an extraterrestrial, on and on and on. He says, at no point do I want to speculate as to what this thing was or be associated with alien beings, alien aircraft, and all that stuff. He says, I'm like, no, I don't want to be part of that community. It's just what we call a UFO. I couldn't identify it. It was flying, and it was an object. He says it's as simple as that. And he says, do the math of what it was. He just basically, you know, says it's like just the facts, ma'am. It's like the Jack Webb. The other thing I thought it was cool was they were talking about, well, the pilot, and then there was the guy who was watching the screen. Yeah, and there's some issues about the guy who was watching the screen points out that he stayed on the screen because you wouldn't expect with the level of clarity that you get from the screen as opposed to having visual.
Yeah.
He didn't, you know, and the biggest thing that he noticed, just, you know, you were saying something that jumped out at you, he said they have real high-tech stuff that measures in the infrared thing because you need to know whether they launched something at you or what, can you identify what it was by the heat from the exhaust flare. And his whole thing was,
there was
this thing was moving around. No exhaust flare
or
anything. But there was, he said, that the thing itself did generate some heat. So it had an IR infrared signature, but... I mean, that was really pretty cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, read this. I'm assuming that maybe this is going to come out. I'll tell you what. There's a cool story about the dino egg. How much time? Oh, we'll make it. Let's take a look at the dino egg.
All right. Dino egg.
This is a, and again, this is kind of, it's almost like the stories we're talking about was, well, did this happen yesterday? Well, what happened just recently was they finally looked at an egg that they'd found and put in a box somewhere for years and years, you know. And this is from, I'm sure, the in China. Dino egg found. The point is that within the fossilized egg were some really perfect, well preserved bones of the embryo itself. Dinosaur embryos are some of the rarest fossils, and most of them are incomplete with bones dislocated. We're very excited about the discovery of little baby Yingliang.
Yingliang.
This is author of the study and researcher of Birmingham Center. It's preserved in great condition, and then there's a little, they have a little artist rendering of what it looked like. It didn't look like this picture. This is kind of, you know, because they basically show all the bones. There's another picture. Now, the thing that's really cool about it is that it's going to, it says the dinosaur is an oviraptor, closely related to birds and part of the theropod group.
Isn't that nifty?
So this goes, it's theropods were carnivorous dinosaurs with small forelimbs that walked on 2 feet. And when we talk about the T-Rex and the Velociraptor. But the thing that kind of jumped out at them, and this is, again, the linkage between dinosaurs and birds. It says a distinct feature they noticed is that the embryo shared a very similar pose to birds before hatching, something mm-hmm. unique in the animal kingdom. So that
Isn't
little
that
simple fact
yeah,
makes them feel that this is going to, oh, there's the actual picture down below. And
it's beautiful.
Very cool. They believe it was non-avian. It was one of those little guys that ran around.
They're thinking that just a couple days before it hatched, there must have been a mudslide that had buried it.
Yeah.
That's one of the theories. And then it suffocated the little dinosaur inside. It then died within a couple days of being born, and it was perfectly preserved.
Yeah, and the other cool thing is they talk about the fact that if you look at the way this thing is positioned inside the egg, it's interesting to see this dinosaur embryo and chicken embryo pose similar way inside the egg. So
awesome,
yeah, they're making some assumptions here on just the morphology or the structure of it, but this is really cool.
What a
it
neat,
goes back
neat
to the
bird
dinosaur kind of story.
Yep.
I don't mean Senator Bird. I'm talking
about Senator Bird.
Not that. Hey, it won't go back. It's not going back to my science page. Won't let me go back. I hate it when it does. I have to go. Jeez, I have to leap through a different way. So let's see what else. Oh,
so
let's take a quick look at diamonds.
At the lab-grown diamonds.
Now, without saying anything, because you may have bought a bunch of diamonds for Libby. Shh. So let's look at the very first one. It just says diamonds.
Diamonds. Explore our collection of affordable lab-grown diamonds and find out why. And then it's asking me to win a $5,000 shopping spree.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Find out why they are in
every way better
than earth-mined diamonds.
Now, of course, like they say, the point is the price has come down.
I don't know if they'd be better than earth-mined diamonds. Now, I mean, what could be more fun than to hand somebody a diamond and say, small children have slaved to bring you this.
Don't bring me down, man. Okay, so the quick
in
bullet.
In horrible working conditions.
Quick bullet points. Lab diamonds are better. Better in the sense that they don't contribute to earth mining, ocean dredging, or habitat destruction.
Whoa. What about small children
how are they
going to work conditions?
They need a job.
And,
I know, it's terrible.
True. Yeah.
Anyway, so there's a beautiful, they show, it says, whether you call them lab-grown diamonds, lab-created diamonds, synthetic diamonds, or man-made, they're all one and the same.
So these people are saying at the very last, it says, if you love diamonds, go guilt-free.
I like
this. Get the sparkle
this.
You want without the high price tag and unethical concerns.
Well, I think this is good. Now, they go, how are they grown? There's a thing talking about high pressure, high temperature, HPHT, and then there's CV, it's carbon vapor deposition.
Yep.
The thing is, they're able now, initially, these were just little diamonds.
A little diamond.
Little diamonds. Now, and then they,
but now they're getting big diamonds.
So how big are we talking about?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's quick jump to the other story, because I think it had some pictures. The second diamond story
was just about 1 minute.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm coming up on the sound here in a second. I think I'm going to have to turn it on. I'm going to turn it down, though.
Okay.
Wow, that's loud.
Diamonds. Questions and answers.
This is really a good article because it's from the Gem Institute of America. You know, it's like a big, these are the guys that have to detect them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're showing the natural diamond, the synthetic diamond. Oh, look, I mean, I'm saying, hey. The point of it is we are now at the point where we've often talked about, you know, carbon is just like a...
It's just a piece of carbon.
Wow. So they have, there's a whole stack of them down here.
Beautiful. You've got pink ones and yellow ones and gold ones.
Oh, yeah, if you scroll down. And
clear and blue.
Oh, look at it. It says, well, that's cute. I'm looking at cubic zirconia. But the point is that they initially were just like sort of a very small... Oh, I'm looking down. Are you down to where they have the hearts?
Yeah. Isn't that gorgeous?
Wow.
Okay, you probably need to sign us off.
Yeah. Well, I've got a few seconds. You know, I can just keep...
Diamonds for...